It's Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN. There's a really great biography out right now about Tom Petty. And I'll admit up front, I haven't gotten all the way through the book yet, but most times when I'm doing these interviews, I'll get through as much as I need to conduct the interview and be kind of, you know, I haven't read the book, you haven't either, so let's find out a little bit about it from the author. But this is one I will not put down after I'm done. It's called Petty, the Biography by Warren Zanes. Warren joins us on the phone right now. How are you, Warren?
Good. How you doing?
Doing great, man. Thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us. Tom Petty is a legend in music and a legend from the 70s and 80s and 90s and beyond, but one that we do not know a ton of about, I feel like. Like Springsteen, you know a lot about. There's been a million things written, tabloid stuff, everything. Tom Petty, I feel like, as famous as he is, has been able in some weird way to fly under the radar a little bit. Is that accurate?
Yeah. In the book, Jackson Browne describes him as reclusive and, you know, talks about his friendship with Tom, and at the end of what he has to say, he says, but really, I don't know him that well. And I think he's got a very small and tight inner circle, and as a public figure, he's always let the songs and the recordings do the work for him, and they've done a lot of good work for four decades, but you're not accustomed to seeing the life beyond the songs. So this is a bit of a first to go this deep.
You know, just yesterday we're watching football games, and there's an Apple Music commercial with Stevie Wonder. And so we look it up online. Stevie Wonder, I believe, is 65 years old. And then I'm reading the book, and I realize that Tom Petty is 65 years old, and that doesn't seem right to me that those guys are the same age. Petty, for whatever reason, seems about 30 years younger than a Stevie Wonder to me. And I don't know why that is. Maybe because Stevie Wonder hit it so young and became so famous so young, and maybe Tom Petty was a little later and has been so much more current. But it's weird to me, and as you're talking about, you get really well into the book, into Tom's early life in Gainesville, Florida, and when he's first making bands, and all the famous names that came out of the Gainesville, Florida area at the same time blow me away.
Yeah, it's among other things, the book is a bit of a study in pre-internet rock and roll culture when you had fully developed regional scenes. So you could have something like Gainesville where you had Don Felder and Bernie Ledden, who had gone to be in the Eagles, and Stephen Stills, who had went to Gainesville High down the road, the Allman Brothers, Lynyrd Skynyrd was opening up shows for Petty's band Mudcrutch. You could have, you know, there were radio stations, there was a network of clubs. Everything was there within the region, so these guys would have fairly developed careers within that area. And then if they wanted to go to the next level, which was the, you know, national, international level, that's when they'd leave. But Gainesville is one of these pockets, and, you know, the University of Florida being there, that made a difference. It was almost like a perfect place for incubation for this, you know, post-Beatles generation.
It's interesting because you talk about the University of Florida there in Gainesville and that helping, and when you first say that, I think, well, how does that help? Because that's a bunch of frat boys, and that's not anybody that he really associated with for these bands, but it does open up a need for bands, right? Because there's kids that want music and want parties, and so there's a way for these bands to actually make a few dollars and see that this world isn't just in your basement and escape, but an actual way to make a living and make a life.
Yeah, you need them, but it's also post-war youth culture explodes at a certain point, and the size of the University of Florida went from something like 500 to 8,000 in 1 year in like the late 40s. So this town was being transformed radically by this young population, and it just happened to sync up with this emerging youth culture that was driven by rock and roll. So yes, it's a built-in audience, but it's also, it creates this kind of cultural exchange where kids are coming from other places with different records. And, you know, at that point, you know, again, you didn't have something like the internet. So important records were coming into town in the hands of somebody, you know, from the West Coast, you know, from the Pacific Northwest. And the locals, guys like Tom Petty, were really, they had their antennae up, and they were picking up on all of this.
Well, and Tom Petty talks about it being the Beatles, and you know, he's just, maybe he's one of the last guys we're really going to hear say that, but it was the first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show that Tom told you that was the moment that I knew that it could be done, that music was this incredible thing, and we played music, and we loved it, but we didn't know what to do with it until we saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. Why was that such a changing point for those guys? Because, hey, if we can just get three other guys together, we can end up there? Was that the idea?
Well, I mean, Petty starts before that. He gets the chance to meet Elvis Presley on a movie set.
Right.
He's 10 years old, and he meets Elvis. But the big difference between Elvis and the Beatles is when people looked at Elvis, he appeared to be more of, you know, a god among mortals. You didn't look at Elvis and think, I could be that. It gave you all the fire. It gave you all the desire, but it didn't give you a clue how to do it. And when the Beatles came, they brought it down to this human scale with that, you know, that kind of boy next door quality. But it was just a signal to young America that, you know, everybody was watching the Ed Sullivan Show, but the message was, this is for the young people, and you can do this. And I personally don't think we'll ever have anything like that again, where overnight people's minds just got turned on and all these bands. I mean, it's not just that they start combing their bangs down. They start rock and roll bands, and it's an explosion across the country. That's the garage band era. You know, that's what Springsteen came out of, Billy Joel, Tom Petty, Elvis Costello. It's a lot of major artists just get their fuse lit.
One of the other interesting things when you talk about, so, you know, they start combing their hair down when they see the Beatles, but the Beatles appeared on the Ed Sullivan show in suits. And there was a time in the book where you're talking about one of the bands that heads, you know, out of the Gainesville area, heads up to New York. But there was a seismic shift all of a sudden. They go up with their pre-rehearsed dance moves and their matching suits, and suddenly in New York, everything has changed. What happened that changed everything, and what kind of freedom did that give a guy like Tom Petty to become who he is instead of having to be just a guy performing in a band that fits into a certain genre?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. You're rightly pointing to what I think is an important part of the book is sometimes we think about the 60s and we think of them as one fairly cohesive cultural movement. And it was a series of movements. So you got that first wave. I mean, the Beatles wearing suits, you know, they were pretty safe, relatively speaking, were still a radical shift. But then you imagine in a few years you're going to see Jimi Hendrix and Cream. And that moment is, you know, when people are really getting comfortable with the idea that rock and roll is art, capital A, and studio experimentation is on the rise. And the idea first, you know, brought to the fore by the Beatles that you do it all yourself is really in the mix. You write your own songs, you play your own instruments, you can produce your own records. And so Petty learns in the garage band era, but the idea that he could be the kind of mind behind it all comes later in that, you know, from that late 60s culture. And then he's off and running. Then he's fully empowered to be a front man, to be a songwriter, to be a singer, and to take himself seriously as an artist, which even in the first part of the 60s when the Beatles run Ed Sullivan, young people saw, this is for me. They weren't thinking of themselves as artists yet.
We're speaking with Warren Zanes. He's the author of Petty, the Biography. Warren, you're talking about, you know, the Beatles and the suits and then the changeover. One interesting thing that had to come with that when Cream and Jimi Hendrix and the rules really start to change now, for a guy like Tom Petty, and you get a lot into his family life and even his father's parents' life and what that was like because they were part Cherokee and all the interesting, you know, growing up in Florida, what that was like, what difficulties that presented. When Tom Petty is in bands And his dad is clearly unthrilled that he's not playing sports, not doing well in school, all the things that, you know, parents at that time are really generally wishing their kids were doing. I imagine that part of what, because you do write about his dad with some of the bands Tom was in, showing up at some shows and liking some of the guys he was in bands with, probably because they were a little more like dad. They hunted and did things like that that Tom wasn't into. But I wonder if one of the things that made it okay, all right, he's wearing a suit, he's performing, he's rehearsing, there is some semblance of actual work to this that the suit sort of signifies, I would imagine, when they're wearing matching outfits. That's a uniform of some sort. And so that gives parents a, okay, there's something to this that's not as bad as I'm thinking it is. And I wonder if when the suits go away, that leads a whole other set of parents to go, wait a minute, this band stuff, I don't like this. I don't like this. This is wrong. You're rebelling too much.
Yeah, well, the shift, or you know, it's always referred to as a gap. The gap grows wider. But it's a full package, you know, when the suits go and the strobe lights come in and they're wearing beads, the parents know full well, you know, whether from reading Life magazine or picking up on it from other parents, that it includes drugs, it includes a freer understanding of sex. They kind of lost the kids at that point. So just as Petty's really coming into his own, the younger generation is looking in a dramatic way different from the parent generation. And, you know, he's already coming out of a home that was abusive. His father really beat him quite severely. The first story that he gives me about that is, you know, Tom Petty's age 5. So he's already feeling a distance from his parents, from his home life, and he's looking for something more. And, you know, rock and roll provides it. And, again, by the late 60s, it's providing an entire lifestyle for him and an art form that, you know, as it happens, he's got a gift for this thing. And that's when he is building a life that is very, very different from his parents' lives.
And for a long time, it's a struggling life. It's not like, you know, Tom Petty is not some overnight sensation that suddenly is at the top of the charts, right? I mean, he's got a bunch of different bands in the Gainesville area, finally moves west with a band. That falls apart quickly. I mean, he is not an overnight success story. Here's somebody who stuck with it, whether it was out of love or incredible talent or just this is, you know, you write in the book that Petty says, there was a time where he realized a band is what I need to be in, and I will never not be in a band again.
Yeah, what people often don't see is the prehistory to a star's success. Because, you know, a guy like Petty, he writes songs that have an ease about them. He's got a cool way of carrying himself. He just looks like he's kind of always been there. So it obscures the fact of how much work he put into it. But I think the guys who end up having the longer, deeper careers, what sets them apart is their capacity to live through disappointments. You know, getting record deals but selling no records, bands breaking up, members leaving. You know, most people pack their bags and go back home after a few disappointments. The guys who end up making lots of records, who we're still talking about today, they just had a capacity each time a disappointment came to dust themselves off and go after the next disappointment.
With Tom Petty, what do you credit that to, that the upbringing makes you so resilient, or just, I'm not going back to any other life, I don't care how many disappointments I encounter, I'm going to do this until it works?
Well, I don't think he had much to go back to, and you know, not to be overly simplistic about it, but when a kid is beaten, you know, starting around age 5, they can't make sense of the world. You know, the person who's supposed to be taking care of them it's a Jekyll and Hyde thing. They might be taking care of them one minute, and they might be the thing that they need to be protected from the next. And you're at 5, your brain is being developed, you're kind of finding your place in society where you just don't have enough to go on. And so when that happens, you're really kind of at odds with the world. And in some people, they just kind of die inside. And in other people, it kicks off some ambitions to in a way, prove that they're worth more than a situation like the one they walked into. And I think even at 65, Tom Petty's got some of that in him. And, you know, and why wouldn't he, you know?
And it's interesting to me because you talk about it, and it was an abusive home life, yet not one that he quickly ran away from necessarily. You know what I mean? He went back and forth. He would get out with bands. They would fall apart. He'd end up back sleeping in a bunk bed in the room he shared with his brother for a while, off and on.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing about difficult home lives. It's still your home. You know, so until you find that thing that is a solid replacement, you know, some people go out of, you know, troubled homes and, you know, marry young and then, you know, find another kind of trouble. For Petty, you know, those bands, but it took a long time to get a band that really looked like everybody was fully invested in it and he could, you know, go out with that. But yeah, you go back and forth between this imperfect home and the world out there that has its own imperfections.
We're speaking with Warren Zanes. The book is Petty, the biography. Let me jump back to Tom Petty for a second, Warren, because I mentioned at the beginning of the interview that Tom has just kind of always flown under the radar. The music is out there, and we know him so well from that. But personally, I feel like we don't truly know him or haven't until now. How do you get Tom Petty to agree to something like this? Is that difficult?
Well, I first met him when I was in my late teens, and I was playing in a rock and roll band called the Del Fuegos out of Boston. And we were Petty fans from the first record. So I was 11 when we bought our first Tom Petty record. And by the time my brother and I were playing in a rock and roll band together, we were there buying every Petty release, and he was just an artist that we believed in. We knew that his next record was going to be good. He never let us down. And so we wanted to find him, and we ended up getting the chance to meet him, and he sang on one of our records, and then he invited us out on a 3-month summer tour. So I was just a kid in the opening band, you know, with the chipped front tooth, a little bit crazy backstage, and I can promise you he was not looking at me as his future biographer. And then I left the music business, and I went back to school, and I had not gone to college, and I got my bachelor's degree and 2 masters and a PhD. And as I was writing my dissertation, you know, among a few other things, I wrote a short book about Dusty Springfield's Dusty in Memphis, and Tom got a copy, and his management company contacted me. Now, I hadn't seen him in like a dozen years, and the message was, Tom would like to take you out to dinner and to talk about this book. And that happened, and as it turned out, he wrote a song called Down South that he said was inspired by some ideas that I was covering in this particular book. So I was an academic at this point. You know, I was not accustomed to rock stars reaching out to me. And suddenly I wasn't the kid with the chipped front tooth in the opening band. He saw me as a writer. And then I did a companion book for the Peter Bogdanovich Running Down a Dream documentary, did notes for their live anthology, you know, various writing projects for the Heartbreakers. And amidst all that, Tom said, would you be interested in writing a bio? And that's where it started. And his deal with me was that he wouldn't tell me what could be in and what had to be out. That was my decision. And he would give me full access. But it was my book. And he crossed some line and just opened up. Was it because we had some prehistory? I don't know, but he never failed me in answering any question I asked of him, and he never dictated, you know, how a story got told or what could be included. It was really an amazing process.
Why does Tom Petty reach out and say it would be a good idea to have you write this book? Was so much written about him over the years that he felt was distorted or wrong that he just wanted one clear record of himself? Or what do you think inspires him to say, hey, why don't we do this?
I think that after they did the documentary, which was 4 hours, so it was, you know, fairly comprehensive, I think he saw, you know, in a fresh light, the breadth of his career, because it's really deep and wide. And in 4 hours of film, it was still moving pretty quickly. And I think he felt like he wanted to go deeper in some areas. And by nature, you know, he is a very, very smart guy. And he's a reader. He is a film buff. He knows the difference in the character of these mediums, and I think he was ready to do the book project and said to me at one point, you know, I'm going to do this once, and that's it, so let's just get the truth out there.
Hmm. Interesting. It must have been fascinating. And you mentioned that you sort of knew Tom Petty when you were in the Del Fuegos. You gloss over a little bit the story when you guys first went, I believe, out to L.A. to perform. And you were doing like 3 shows, and every night you're begging people in the audience to get Tom Petty to come to a show, just hoping somebody out there knows Tom Petty in some way because you guys are huge fans. He never shows up at a show, but backstage the last night, you get a call from Tom Petty himself.
Yeah, I mean, we would have slept on his doormat if that's what we needed to do. We were so into him for so long that, you know, people have asked me, like, what was it he, you know, liked about your band? And I say, you know, honestly, I don't even know if he was given a choice to like us or not like us. We were just destined to track him down. And, you know, so there we were. But he was always very generous with us. You know, he sees rock and roll as something that gets passed down. You know, there were those who passed it down to him. You know, here's a guy who meets Elvis, backs Dylan, is in a band with George Harrison and Roy Orbison, you know, makes a record with Johnny Cash. He knows the guys he got it from because he works so closely with them. So I think he's got almost like an ethical relationship to the history of this music. This is something you pass down. So he was very kind to us, and that's how I explain it. And then he extended it into this process.
Yeah, so many years later. And it's interesting because, you know, when you're that in love with somebody who you idolize, and the Del Fuegos idolized Tom Petty, right? You're begging to meet him. You get that opportunity. Thank God it didn't go south, right? I mean, I think so many times when you idolize somebody from afar, based on their music, based on who you think they are, and then you meet them, and it turns out to be a whole nother way. It must have been such a relief to not only meet him, but to then have him be really cool and really generous with you and your bandmates.
Yeah, no, agreed. But here's why I wasn't surprised that he was what we hoped he would be. It's just those songs.
Mm.
I don't think you can fake a good, you know, emotionally resonant song. I don't think you can fake it. I think listeners are very sophisticated in, you know, hearing the truth in a song. And Petty's got, you know, he can be funny. He can, you know, really be in the rock and roll mode. But in those songs, you hear a kind of truth. And we'd heard it since we were kids. And it was very consistent. He never oversold it. It was just him. It felt honest. The quality was always so high. The band was always so good. And on some levels, like, of course he's got to be as cool as those records. How could it be otherwise?
We're speaking with Warren Zanes. The book is Petty, the Biography. You can find out more at Warren-Zanes, Z-A-N-E-S.com, Warren-Zanes.com. You can follow Warren on Twitter at Warren Zanes, Z-A-N-E-S. It's Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN. A few more minutes with Warren Zanes. The book Petty, the Biography is out now and available, and it is really hard to put down. It's been enjoyable, Warren. I really thank you for putting the effort into it.
Oh, thank you.
You were mentioning Tom and these songs, and you knew he was going to be a good guy because those songs have to come from such a true place and an honest place. You talk in the book a little bit about Tom getting his heart broken. He used to love chasing women, and he says he chased in kindergarten. He went after the prettiest girl that day, and he said she ended up being so pretty that as a high schooler, a teacher ran off with her, that he had a good eye right away for these things. But you talk about him getting his heart broken and that closing him off a little bit from relationships. And between that and his upbringing and the abusive household and the life he led, how much of that resonates in those songs? How much of that gave him his ability to write these amazing songs?
Well, I think... you know, I identify with that. It's not everybody, but I think a lot of people feel really strong romantic feelings at a very young age. And he fit that bill, but I think part of, you know, why those feelings impacted him the way they did is because of the home he's coming out of, you know, suffering abuse at the hands of his father. When he goes off to school and sees something in, you know, a girl's face, he's going to get carried away with it because it suggests something greater, something better, something safer, something warmer. And so he gets very swept up in that. And then when it becomes an unrequited love, then his move is to do what he had to do with his father, which is protect himself. But those feelings don't just go away, and I think when he discovered songwriting, he discovered his safe place. You know, his place that he could take all of those feelings. And I don't think we would have the catalog of material that we do have were that not the case. Because, you know, when he got married, there were real problems in the marriage, you know, after the first few years, and songs were that place. You know, whenever anything was turning dark out there, the world of songs never let him down. That's how I see it. And so he would go there. You know, his daughter at the end of the book, there's a beautiful passage where she's talking about her father saying, you know, I want to take you to this place that I go to, you know, and he's describing the world of songs. And she said she grew up with this notion of songs being a place. And it's really interesting to me, but it also helps you to understand where all these songs come from.
It's crazy to think about, because you wish he had a better upbringing. You wish he had, you know, you wish happiness for people, right? Especially our own children. But for Tom, without all of this unhappiness, maybe he doesn't get to become the artist he became. Maybe he is an accountant somewhere or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to make the easy equation that, you know, pain leads to art, but I've done a lot of work with artists, whether at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and on various movie projects and, you know, other book-related projects. And I'm the artists whose stuff gets to me the most tend not to be the most settled people. They're searching people. They found art, and it did something for him. It yes, there was some kind of healing, but it was never a full healing. You know, there's conflict in them. And, you know, time and time again, you know, I just think the people who have had those quieter lives, sometimes they don't need art in quite the same way.
Where is Tom Petty at now, like in his career and in life? Is he satisfied? Is it hard to stay hungry when you've had so much success? It's so interesting to me that these artists that have an incredible amount of success, as they get older, very rarely bands that are still together, still making new music, are they still hitting the top of the charts. And I don't know if that's just taste change, they change, or they achieve a freedom where they can experiment and do more what they want and perform the music more for themselves or for the people that they know will find it. Where is Tom Petty now artistically?
Well, personally, I think that his feeling is that the next record could be his best. You know, I think that's the way he's lived his artistic life. Is there's no point in making another record if there isn't a chance that this one might be the best of the bunch. And he's kept the quality so high. I mean, you can't find a Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers record or a Tom Petty solo record that isn't worth the time you put into it. You'll always get something back. But he's restless, and he's an extremely hard worker. But what's really interesting to me is he's also grown old with his material. You know, he doesn't sing about being a teenager at 64.
Right.
He talks about the life that's in front of him, being the man at the age he is at. And to me, this creates a situation in which it might be that Tom Petty at 68 gives us his best record yet, and we get this incredible viewpoint of a guy who's seen 68 years of a really interesting, really unusual life, and he's going to give us some of that back. And there aren't a lot of artists who I think of like that. Like, yeah, I love the Rolling Stones, but I'm not expecting them to make their best record. It's not that I've given up, because I believe in them as a band. I don't believe in them as much as a recording and writing band. Tom Petty hasn't lost any of his fire. You know, that is really interesting to me. And you know, I remember when Dylan did Time Out of Mind, and it felt like, wow, he's really looking at issues of mortality. I feel like Tom Petty's heading there, and he might give us a document of that point in life that just knocks us all out. He's got it all, and the way he pursues his art, if anybody could do it, it would be him.
Is he working on an album right now?
I've never seen him not at work. You know, there's always one that he's tracking down. You know, when my last scene in the book, you know, there's a kind of closing statement, but the last scene is really him going back out to his studio because he thinks there might be a song out there. And I think that's how he's lived his life. And, you know, he reminds me of some of the great artists, like a Johnny Cash. You feel like this is what they do, and they're going to do it as long as they can.
The book is Petty, the Biography. Warren Zanes is the biographer. You can find it in bookstores. You can follow Warren online, warren-zanes.com. Follow him on Twitter as well, at Warren Zanes. It's really a fascinating read, Warren. I really appreciate you spending the time with us, and can't wait to hear what Tom does next.
Hey, thank you.
It's Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN.